Blog Talk Radio.
That we were dead, but we pretended that we still live. With no regrets, we never bled, and we took everything life could give, and came up broken, empty-handed in the end. In the hearts of the blind, something you'll never find is a vision of a light. With the voice of the dead, I'm screaming.
Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt, and always with me is Dennis. What's going on, Dennis? How are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. Hey, Matt, let's see if we can test your psychic abilities, my friend. Who am I standing here with?
No, wait, remember? I'm not supposed to do that.
Oh, hell, open the door. Take a peek. Look through the kitty cat door.
No,
all right, I'll
no,
save you that headache. I'm standing here with Howard O'Dell and Ryan, and I don't know his last name, so it really doesn't matter, I guess. But they're from All Seeing Paranormal. But, yeah.
I didn't know their last names. That's why I was leaving you to go under the bus on that one.
Oh, that would be a bus moment. Thanks for chucking me under the bus, you prick.
Well,
I appreciate it.
You're used to it.
But it's all good. It's all
I
good.
Knew Howard
I
and Ryan. I just didn't know their last name. I couldn't do a formal introduction.
That's all right. I do know how to check you under the bus.
It puts the lotion on his skin or else it gets fucking. You know,
there we go.
And the bus has started. The engine has warmed up. The brakes are released. The air is built. Are we ready for a great conversation, my brother?
I am fully ready. Part of the reason that with Halloween and all that stuff is I figured it'd be a good show. And I thought that Flyleaf was quite fitting with the vocal or the lyrics to that song. But not only is Halloween coming up, but also Day of the Dead in Mexico. So that's coming up November 2nd. Or November 1st, I'm sorry. So it's going to be a hell of a paranormal day or 2 days for a lot of the people that I know of Latin culture on top of the just regular us paranormal people and kids and candy and all that stuff. So
no, you didn't cut me off. Sounds like a damn good time. But I was being polite, and I was walking my guests out the door. And, of course, now they're in the backyard with the pit bulls. And, well, don't mind the screaming and bawling. The pits just want to tear them up.
No, your dogs are too damn sweet.
Oh, my God, man. I am so pissed. Y'all take care. Hey, thanks for coming by, and we'll definitely work on some evidence review, and we'll get some locations tied down. And we'll get some dates tied down, too. All right. All right, brother.
So,
I'm back with
the show starts with this great conversation, and you're kicking people out. What in the hell?
Well, I mean, yeah. I do my broadcast naked, and I didn't really want to be embarrassed with him in the room with me in the studio, so they gotta go.
Why you and Scott have such great conversations on air.
Well, that's it. I mean, I am the naked broadcaster, I guess. So, yeah.
Thank God we don't have a video feed.
Well, you know, we were talking about that, and I'm seriously thinking about putting a high-def camera up, and we can do the high-def video feed.
Let me know what link just goes to the radio one so I don't get confused and accidentally click on the video link.
Well, no,
please,
you have to do
please
it
give too. Me that solid.
No, you have to do it too. This is not, look, this is a two-person program, and if I'm going to be broadcasting naked, then you're broadcasting naked.
All right. I guess I'm good with that. But anyway, before the screeching metal of what could turn into a train wreck in this part of the conversation actually occurs. So how's your week, man?
Oh, man. It's been really good. I've been sitting back listening to evidence from Henricus Historical Park. Any decent investigator's got a few different recorders going. I've had three running, and judging from my SoundCloud reviews or SoundCloud listens, everybody seems to think they're pretty damn awesome. Which, by the way, I'm going to drop a few names on this one because the quality of the EVPs that I captured are so damn good. They actually left me baffled, which after, 10-plus years doing this shit, to have EVPs that leave me baffled, that's saying a lot. So I have actually reached out to a few of our friends in the paranormal world. Scott Greenwald is listening to my EVPs. He's agreed to spectrum analyze them and find out what spectrum the voice comes in at. Mark and Debbie are also listening to them. There's they're just some of the strongest damn EVPs I've ever captured, and it just leaves me baffled, brother. Which works perfectly with tonight's idea for the show of, is there life after death? I don't think there's any question.
That's part of what I want to get into as far as the analysis of true life, not obviously living, breathing, heartbeat, you know, life, but what actually physically happens to the body when it dies. And there's questions that I have that I wanted to pose to you, and I thought, yeah, what the hell, let's do this in more of an open forum with both of us having medical background, and I also would love if anybody is listening has a few moments to call in and give your ideas or thoughts or experiences in your own way. That's why I completely left it open and didn't have anybody specifically booked for the evening, because it could go a couple ways. So if that's the case, then once we start to get into it, if something piques your interest, you want to call in or share an experience or comment on anything we're talking about, 323-580-5703 is the number, and we'll catch you on the board and get you in. So
I actually have a caller on the board, so you know what? I'm not even going to field it. Let's see what the hell happens, and let's see how bad this can go. But 298-1841, you're on the board with us.
Excuse me, I suck for her. We need to find a good time where we're through her.
No, something tells me they weren't expecting to be on the board.
Hello?
Hello? Radio, you're on air with us.
Hey, guys. Hello?
Hey, buddy.
What's going on?
Oh, same old, same old. Who we got on air with us?
This is Howie. I'm in the band.
That's what I thought. I'm like, wait a minute. That number looks familiar. What the hell?
Yeah, by the way, you don't always get a warning that we're throwing you on air.
Yeah, love the warning. Rock on.
And so what is that about? Wow, he's really an asshole? Wow, that's uncalled for. Yeah, I thought we had a great conversation and had a good time, and damn. Then when I'm able to eavesdrop into the van and you don't even know that I'm there with you, I'm an asshole, huh?
I know, it sucks.
So, let me ask you this, Howard. By the way, folks, we have Howard on air with us from All Seeing Paranormal Society. Or the all-seeing, I don't know what the hell's happening. What is your opinion? Is there life after death?
I would say absolutely yes. From all the evidence that we've pulled, both spiritually and scientifically, everything proves to, yes, there is a life after death. Without question. There's just too much evidence out there that points to the physical contact, to the electronic voice phenomenon, of course, that all three of us were talking about tonight. It just points to all directions. It's absolutely positive.
So what you're saying is it's very hard to have your belt loop tugged and a breath in your ear when nobody's around without life after death.
That's right. Unless there is something coming through from another plane or another planet, or however you look at it, that's the only possible definition and plausible understanding.
Well, I tell you, I'm convinced that, you know, just because you die, it doesn't go dark. And, you know, it's not a matter of everything goes dark and you become one food. There's something there after that. As to what, I don't know, but I'll tell you this. I definitely want to know, and that's what I got into this shit for. That's why I've got, you know, big suitcases of equipment. And, you know, I don't know if any of it will do me any good, but I want to know. So I'll buy all this equipment for whatever reason until such time as I can prove that it doesn't mean jack shit in the investigation aspect of it, and we'll go from there.
Well, absolutely agree. I mean, the equipment is only there to help signify something. You know, EMF reader, EVPs, MAL reader, whatever you use, and even airpiece equipment motors, all it is just a piece of equipment to justify there's something there. What it is, we don't know. It comes into personal belief, once again, in your religion. You're looking at the simple fact of how do you believe? You know, do you believe we just turn into energy? Do we go somewhere else? Is there something else out there? Is there something else other than us? That's all coming into personal belief. But when you get a justified question and you give, you know, the thought process of asking another question and you get a response that actually either deals with the site or deals with the individual that's at hand with you, how can you justify that? Except for your, you know, religious belief or thought process that there is life after we pass.
You know, there is something that I've been wanting to try as far as, you know, talking about EVPs and all that. And I think that this would probably be the easiest way to get this to work. I just haven't been able to figure out the logistics of it because I can't do it. I can be there for it, but I can't actually perform the test I want to do. I want to actually sit down and have a telepathic EVP session to where no words are actually being spoken, but energy is putting out there in a certain form to see if that's actually deciphered with an audible response. It's a huge, huge logistical thing to try and figure out, but I actually think that that would be kind of cool if somebody who is able to, I don't know if it'd be using a medium or, it wouldn't be a sensitive or, you know, a straight-up psychic that actually, you know, explains audibly, this is what we're going to do. We'll sit down and go through, you know, the questionnaire of what's to be asked and explain to answer audibly. And if you just get dead silence, but you're getting words spoken in that silence that's intelligible to what that questionnaire is, I think would be a really cool test. I just, like I said, I don't have the ability to do it or know how to do it. So I don't know if that's something that piques any of your interests or not.
Oh, yeah. I've actually thought about the process of writing your questions down and sitting down. I agree with you. That's another whole thought that I've had was telepathical part about this whole situation that's going on right now. We're talking last night about, you know, being able to communicate and all this new, you know, gadgetry that's out. And, of course, you got cell phone towers and all that to bring that back into play again. And, of course, like Dennis and Ryan and myself were talking tonight about, you know, the power that's out right now. Do we really need to ask questions? Maybe they can just use that power to pick up our thoughts or write the questions down or, you know, what we're curious about, and do they respond just to the writing it down because we're visually seeing it as we write it down? So could they connect to what we're writing down? Do we have to speak it? Good question.
Well, I actually had a conversation with, and I wish to God I could remember who this conversation was with, but she was able to tell me that she believes that they're able to be on the other side, of course, in multiple places at once. You know, when little Susie in Washington needs grandma to be there and comfort her, simultaneously in Maine, little Johnny wants Grandma to be there to comfort him. That Grandma is able to be in both places. Is it possible to prove that the dead can be in both places at once? And what kind of test would it take to prove that? I mean, proving that there's something after death, I'm pretty much convinced. That one's easy to do. I mean, we have EVPs. We've got video that shows all that. I mean, now that's all suspect to, you know, what your opinion is on what the evidence is. But I want to know, can I be, well, let's say that I've grown to my old age limits and I've passed. Can I be with my grandson, hypothetical, and granddaughter, hypothetical, on each side of the continent at the same time? What would it take for evidence to prove that the dead can actually be in two places at once?
Well, let's be honest here. The proof of life of spirits, I'm not going to, because life after death is a completely different thing, but the proof of spirits being in existence also still hasn't been proved yet, because there's still a $1 million prize out there that nobody's collected on. So for actual definitive proof, it hasn't happened yet. There are bits and there are bits and pieces that will go into the theory that all of us are doing, but there hasn't been actual solidified proof yet.
I don't know. I think if I get a voice from nowhere that I can't correspond to anybody visually around me that answers intelligently to the conversation at hand, loudly and clearly, I think that's evidence of some sort of life beyond death.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm not saying that, hey, I'm being Debbie Downer here, and I'm going to be like, oh, no, well, I'm going to stop doing this shit because there hasn't been proof yet. And I can pretty much, well, I'd like to say that I can pretty much guarantee that I don't think of any current tests, which I've been doing a lot of research of what's been done in labs and all that kind of stuff, that if people with multi-million dollar pieces of equipment and full labs just to test this can't answer that question. I'm not saying that, you know, it could be some yahoo and walking around in a forest somewhere that's on their first investigation and just watched the show and said, I'm going to do it exactly like this. They just happen to be in the right place at the right time. But for definitive proof to actually call it a true scientifically proven phenomenon, same thing with UFOs. You know, it's just, it's all that stuff to where the pieces haven't fully lined up. The pieces are there, but they just haven't lined up in a proper scenario to be recognized by the true scientific community.
Right.
You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A full-body apparition able to communicate with you.
Yeah, full-bodied apparition that will sit there and you can have an actual full conversation with during on video and while getting still photos and all that. Everybody's moving in the right direction, don't get me wrong. I mean, with all, you know, a lot of the new stuff that's coming out as far as body mapping and all that, I mean, that was kind of an outside-of-the-box thinking thing. Do I fully agree with it? No, because, and I'm not going to say what it is or what that actual piece of equipment was derived from, but definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I want to have for me to actually say definitively, I was sitting there talking with Steve Jones or whatever, you know, and I did all this research and found out that he was the one, he died on the property and all that, is I want to have a full actual interview studio set up to where he sits down on the chair next to me and we do it like a Tonight Show style communication. Then I'd be like, it's there. I have everything. But
you have the problem. Until we have that, that's why the speculation is always going to be out there. Until you have complete 100% contact, it's always going to be lingering, going, you know, this is not hard evidence. These people are just scamming people, or they're just out there trying to say that there's something and it's not there. You know, we're having to prove ourselves over and over again, and we're scratching at the surface. But to add to your conversation prior, you're right. It's everything is like a puzzle. Everybody's got a little piece of the puzzle. How do we put it all together in a one lump sum?
Yeah.
I don't think it can be put in a one lump sum no matter what. By the way, Canadian Ross afterlife expert, bite me.
Ross is back.
He's an expert on everything. Ladies and gentlemen, Ross is one of our truest followers, and he is an expert on everything. If there's anything that you need to know about, he's an expert. I love him to death. Thanks again for joining us, Ross. We are doing our best to make a show great just for you to listen in on.
No, and we need the critique from the expert, too. I mean,
and if I could get him to call in, Ross, right now I am going to do 2 minutes of dead air silence if you don't call in. So if you don't call in, the rest of the listeners will know it's your fault, but you have to call in at 323-580-5703. I'll say it nice and slow. I know you're a Canadian, and well, the school system isn't the greatest. 323-580-5703. But Ross, you gotta call in, man. I've talked to you off and on all day. Now, Matt,
Let me stop you right there. That is not a good way to get somebody to call in where you offend a whole country. Okay.
Oh damn! I thought I was doing the right thing. But no, I've actually been talking to Ross all day long. Off and on. And I'll tell you what, Ross is a fantastic guy to talk to. It's all been through messaging. He won't call me. I'm not real sure why. Maybe he's afraid that I'll sneak through the phone lines. But I don't know.
It's long distance for him, and I you know, half the time I have to justify wasting the money to call you, too.
It doesn't cost you anything to call me. Wait.
Yes, it does. Really? It cost me time that I'll never get back.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Now, Harry, you drove across town. Was that time that was wasted that you'll never get back in your life and you feel bad about losing?
Oh, come on. Of course not. I had a blast tonight, dude.
No one just spread to my heart. Fuck it all. Ain't nobody loves me.
You haven't known that as long as I am.
You got me on mute again, don't you?
No, actually, you're not, brother. You're right in there. Hey, I'll tell you what. Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun. You ready? I got someone that wants to talk to us, and I'm not sure who it is. So I'm just bringing them live, but they're in the 905 area code. Hey, welcome to Full Spectrum Radio. Who am I talking with?
Mr. Dennis, Mr. Matt, it's a pleasure to speak to you, sir. It's
Canadian
Ross from the best educated country in the world.
What's going
Canada.
On, Ross? How are you doing, man?
Not too much. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, oh, Ross. My goodness. So I actually get to hear Ross's voice.
Well, you don't have to ask me twice.
Well, I
just
I
insult him once, apparently.
In. Yes, I only need to
insult
him once.
It takes some time.
So, Ross,
so it's,
what
it's quite the
what
subject
your...
tonight. Who came up with tonight's mighty fine topic?
That would be
actually,
me.
Actually, Matt came up with the subject of, is there life after death? Now, Ross, you've chimed in on every single show that we've had for, I know, at least the last 6 weeks. What is your opinion, brother? Is there life after death?
Oh, it's quite a fascinating subject, and it's one that, you know, I think science is still trying to come to grips with. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, about 20 years ago, when I was going to catch the hop on the work bus, am I coming across all right on the phone there?
Oh, yeah, you're doing fine, brother.
Okay. So about 20 years ago, when I was hopping on to catch the work bus early in the morning, the normal stop that I jump on, about a week after my grandma passed away, she was standing right across the street. It's about, can't be any more than 20 feet, I would gather. And if I knew what I knew today, I would, you know, walk across and hug her. But I was scared shitless. And that's the reason why I find the paranormal so interesting, and it's always gathered my attention ever since.
Right. Now, how long had, well, first and foremost, I apologize and my sympathies for your grandma passing.
Yeah, that was quite a long time ago, but it has stuck with me ever since. And I'd love to know the answer to that question as much as any one of us.
Now, from the time that she actually passed to the time that you saw her across the street, how much time had elapsed?
No longer than a week, about a week later to the day. And I didn't go to work that day. I actually ran home.
That actually brings me to something that I've been thinking about for a long time and been talking to a lot of people about is I have a theory called the 10-day theory. That it's usually more true with,
hey Matt,
you know, yeah.
Please let me interrupt.
Go ahead.
And I know exactly where you're going with it. How long ago did this occur, Ross?
Like I said, about 20 years ago. And
okay.
I've had other relatives that have passed, but I've never seen any of them. Except for my grandma, and we were pretty close.
Okay. All right. Now, Matt, go ahead with your 10-day theory, because I absolutely love this theory.
All right. The 10-day theory that I've developed, and this is talking to a lot of people that are non-believers or not non-believers. They're not active. They have really no interest in the paranormal or anything like that. And I've actually, of the people that I've talked to, it's about 88% of them that actually came forward when I was asking these questions and were talking about it. And, yeah, I mean, that leaves 12% of people that said, no, it's never happened to them. But 88% of people who actually responded, and it was well in the hundreds of people that I've talked to about this, is they've had, it doesn't matter, grandma, grandpa, you know, father or son, like anything like that, they've had their loved one come to them at some point within 10 days of their passing. And it's usually a complete visual thing. It's scary because of what it is. Like, you know that they're gone, but you see them. But it's always a pleasant experience to where it's not kind of like a one last goodbye, yeah, I'm still here if you need me kind of thing. And whether or not you proceed to call upon that or not. But, yeah, 88% of people that numbered in the hundreds that actually participated with me on this said that, yeah, within 10 days they had a loved one come to them.
And that was something that you did on your own?
Yeah. Well, put it this way. My background's in abnormal psychology. So tying that in with all this stuff is I start to think of the people who aren't involved in anything to do with the paranormal. And, yeah, some of the people that I talk to, it's kind of what that got them into it, and it was a situation like yours where, I saw my grandmother 20 years ago, and it scared the crap out of me, and I've been interested in it ever since. But a lot of the people that I talk to, I'd say about 75% of them never asked any questions, never pursued anything above and beyond this, to where that was their experience. They shared it with me. And because I asked the question. And like I said, I mean, there were...
And could that be because they're too scared to pursue it, or...?
Well, I mean, yeah, there are people who have pursued it because of that stuff, but the other thing with it is a lot of time, and then I started to dive into it a little bit more in my own theory and dissecting my own theory about it, and there's a lot that's happening within the first 10 days, which is mostly when and it lasts longer for some people, but after 10 days, after the wake, after the funeral, after all that kind of stuff, and the family gets together, the memory is still there, but it still doesn't have that full impact that it did have within the first 10 days. So could it have been an emotional manifestation of what they wanted to see in a lot of cases? Yeah, it's a definite possibility. They miss them so much, and something reminded it of, something reminded them of this person. And their brain kind of triggered a perfect scenario to where they got that one last thing. Did it happen with a lot of people who were woken up from sleep and saw their significant, loved one standing at the end of the bed? Yeah, that was a lot of the case, too. Well, then that throws a whole other monkey wrench in things to where you're emotional, you're dreaming about this person, you're not fully awake, like, you ever woken up in the middle of the night and you had a dream and you could swear that it was true? That
very vaguely, I think maybe once, that it was scary enough to think it was true. Unless, a lot of times you think it's true, but you know it's not real. Once you wake up, maybe just once that I actually thought it was real.
Yeah, and within the theory, is it something to say that yes, the paranormal exists because these people who have nothing to do with it experience it? Not in this test, just due to the fact that it has to do with an extremely emotional situation.
Or they may not take it as serious.
True.
But it's what you're talking about is totally different from, for example, a near-death experience where that is, that's all emotional.
Yeah.
Well, a near-death experience is totally personal. It doesn't involve, typically it doesn't bring anybody else into that scenario. It's all about you. That's a near-death experience. I watched the doctors do this, or, I heard the nurses saying that, and I watched the doctors and nurses interacting, but that's all centered around you. That's a near-death experience. As far as meeting somebody that, you're perfectly healthy, but all of a sudden this other entity or this other person that's a vital part of your life comes to you when you're perfectly fine, I think that's a totally different type of energy and a totally type of different situation.
Yes, I agree with you 100%, but at the same time, I think the near-death experience is getting a lot more study.
Well, right now it is because, And ironically, I
actually
heard...
Like, do you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely, because
I think they're really serious about the trying to find the answers to that.
Well,
if they could find the answer to that, they might be able to solve the puzzle.
Well, they're trying to find the answers to everything right now, and that's wonderful in one aspect. I really appreciate that, because that's what I've done for the past almost three decades, is find the answers. How did my grandfather, when I was seven, come to me and tell me goodbye and he loved me, but he was already dead, and he was 125 miles away? But I saw him, I heard him, he was right beside my bed. That's over three decades ago. Now, science is trying to figure out how I could have possibly done that. I'm totally good with that, but here's my thought, is if I have a near-death experience and, you know, I see myself, I don't know, hovering above my own body in the emergency room, or I see that bright tunnel of light, how can we, as paranormal investigators, decipher between the two? And how can we tap into that energy that was able to make that occur for that person? That's what I want to do. I want to know, okay, you had a near-death experience. I can pretty much open up any book and go, okay, here's the, you know, cookie-cutter example of exactly what happened. But I want to know from Joe Blow on the street that's perfectly healthy, that had somebody come to him from his past, you know, that the kid that he hung out with in high school, or, you know, the neighbor three doors down, that all of a sudden he's able to see him or her and communicate with them. There's a big difference between those two realms.
Well, there's two different scenarios that you brought up in that, and between near death and Russ, I can tell you why there's a lot more study in that as far as on a scientific level goes. But Dennis, what you're talking about people hovering above their body and seeing them being worked on, that's also classified as an out-of-body experience, which is the same. There's a lot of crossover in them, but it is two different things. Another example of a out-of-body experience, if you will, or just feeling of terror and having that same kind of thing of what happens in the human brain during one of those situations is sleep paralysis. But that's a whole other thing. But Ross, I think the reason that there's a lot more study being going on about near-death experience is you have somebody you can analyze. If you're looking for a spirit, specter, ghost, whatever you want to call it, there's no repetitive test you can do on that individual and get true scientific results. But with like what like David Roundtree and working with psychics and EKG and all that kind of stuff. Well, if I had a near-death experience, I can go to David. He can hook me up to an EKG. He can actually monitor my brain waves, hook me up to lie detector, hook me up to, you know, all this stuff to prove the physiological end of it, of how I react on emotion when I'm talking about it, what's physically happening to me when I'm trying to describe it. And that's a lot easier way to get an answer than, is there anybody here with us? What happened to you? Tell us your story. And then just wait. So I can understand from a lab perspective of why near-death experience is studied more than like even well, even near death or out of body is studied more than is there life after death in a lot of ways. I mean, you talk to scientists, you talk to spiritualists, you talk to all these people, and they all have conflicting stuff, and they're, you know, Nobel Prize winning authors and you know, NASA scientists and stuff that do that or try to answer that question on their own time. And what you get is just everything is pretty much on the fence, 50-50 conflicting. Through the Wormhole just did a show on Is There Life After Death? And it was 50-50. So the question's still out there, and there's no more answers than there were before.
Well, I mean, my take on it is how can you really get the answers unless someone is dead for a long enough time and can possibly come back and answer that question? That's the only way
exactly. You
would be able to answer that, would you not?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, for doing a full, you know, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12-hour investigation, whatever, you do the same place for 3 days. When you condense down everything after your 3 weeks of going through all the stuff on all of your devices, you may have, you know, a good 10 minutes worth of physical stuff on there. So does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I think when you're talking about the ghost hunting, it comes down to the spirits being intelligent, or just getting the what do they call it, the residual haunting?
Yeah.
Where it's played over and over again, the same thing.
Yeah. But,
so I mean, when you're catching an EVP, I think it's more residual, and it's not. You don't get so much the intelligent spirit answering questions.
Well, actually, Dennis, this is a perfect time. Play the Rock Hall one.
You want to hear Rock
Hall? Since I can't scroll through the audio clips, what's the one to get this? That's the one I want to hear.
Getting this? Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
get it set up on
it
first,
actually. It does actually fill in at this point, but here's the question. And this was part of what, you know, Howard and I were talking about, and Ryan. We have a location that has 400 years of written history. The trouble is we don't know at what point in time this history falls in, and this individual that is giving us this EVP falls in. I mean, I know there's life after death. Everybody knows there's something beyond. Otherwise, we wouldn't be looking for it. We wouldn't be doing paranormal research. We wouldn't be doing ghost hunts. The question comes in, what makes an energy strong? Because I have others in that same exact area that are very weak sounding. And, well, here's what I got. Now, I'll throw out a little forefront to it. I have a investigator he's not actually an investigator. He was a 14-year-old young man that was a family member of my investigator. I set him by himself in a room that is in the building that's known for an individual that used to molest young women.
And to this day, females still get groped by something, an entity, you know, unseen force. They still get grabbed. So this is the EVP that I got. I'm going to play it twice, and I want you to hear the last two words of it because it answers my statement.
The first one that gets anything, that's where we congregate.
Goodness.
The first one that gets anything, that's where we congregate.
Goodness.
So you hear me at the beginning saying the first one that gets anything, that's where we congregate. And then you get that deep voice that says, getting this.
You know, that sounds better here than it did actually right there, Dennis. I can actually hear it clearer on the board.
Yeah, I'm hearing something like goddess or around those lines, so pretty close. Goddess
well,
or...
Well, I think it just goes to show that there is life after death, and I don't know if we have an option, whether we actually go to the light or we don't. I don't know if we have an option to go to heaven or go to hell. I don't know what our options are on that side, and the only people that can tell me that are the ones that I get on my recorders. But I will tell you this. From over a decade of doing this, I know one thing for a fact. I no longer fear death as much as I used to, simply because I know that I can still communicate, I can still get my voice out. Now, there are some that I'm assuming have moved on completely. They've gone to the light. Whether they've gone to heaven or whether gone to hell or not, I don't know. But I know right now in my life, I'm a lot more comfortable. If I'm facing a car crash tomorrow that I know I'm probably going to get taken out of in a body bag, I don't fear it so much. I don't hear what's on the other side because I've been able to talk to them. And I can get things like this that make it a little easier to deal with the fact that they're on the other side. They've seen what it's like. Now, if I got to spend 500 years in the same fucking location, oh, God, please, just, no. Just send me to hell.
I agree, but at the same time, that's what I was saying about the residual haunting. Because it's a lot of it's just, you know, could be the same person over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, sorry about the cough, folks. But, yeah, I mean, I have no idea what the hell is on the other side. I have, like everybody does, I have this mental picture of what's on the other side. And wow, is that grass green? And wow, is this, does the rain smell pretty? And oh, look how soft the angel's wings are. Yeah, well, you know what? Until you have actually visited the other side, I'm not really sure that you can give me a reference point on any of it. And I'm not really sure that just a near-death experience, that's like, you know, I'm going into the 400 block of, you know, Adams Street, but I'm going to stop at the 300 block and see what it looks like over there. Well, no, you're not actually there. Can we actually talk to the people that have crossed over?
Here's one.
Most of the near-death experiences, most of those people go on to become mediums and stuff like that from what I've noticed.
Well,
you know, instead of providing answers about, instead of being more informative about the afterlife, they become, and I'm not talking, you know, it's a pretty big majority. They turn out to be psychic mediums and, you know, more into that sort of business.
And a lot of them, too, and I'll agree with that. There was a question that was posted, and I can't remember who posted it, but it was about women, that there's more women psychic mediums out there than there are men. And the one thing I've noticed in talking to a lot of psychic mediums, when I start to especially get in an in-depth conversation with them, is most of them have had something that happened to them that was extremely traumatic, if not to themselves, to somebody extremely close to them. A lot of times you see with the psychic medium stuff, it happens in twins, and either one twin was lost, or I don't know if it's just that actual kinetic bond or what it is, or if, like, even people that I know who are mediums that had their umbilical cord around their neck when they were born in, or being born, and it comes out to where they were blue and they were revived, well, they're more open to that other side. And so that it does make perfect sense if, in fact, there was a way to gauge accuracy to that, you know, near-death experiences will cause actual psychic ability, or is it just because of what has happened to them in the past that, and having that out-of-body experience or having that psychic medium experience that just kind of predestined them to follow that suit and hone their skills to where they attribute their abilities to that exact event?
Yeah, that's a good point, Matt.
I know there are are ones who aren't. I'm just saying that there are ones who I've talked to that over time of conditioning, you know, that's the one thing with the human mind is it's an amazing, amazing vessel.
That's what I said when I mentioned the subject these guys picked, because then we can get into, for example, the guy that's sitting in the coma for, quite a few years. Is he alive or is he dead?
Yeah.
Because if the brain's dead and, you know, stuff like that.
And that makes me think about, if you're in a coma from impact or coma from trauma in the collision, and then you're taken to the hospital and you're placed in a medical coma, medically induced coma. What is the difference between what the mind is able to perceive and the mind is able to, tune in? If you're in just a coma from the trauma, the impact, the whatever put you in a coma, can you still hear your family and loved ones telling you that we love you and we're here for you? But if you're in a medically induced coma where they actually, medicate the body and mind, what are you able to hear at that point?
Ooh, Professor Dennis. Professor Dennis.
Yes.
Calling Professor
Dennis. You didn't raise your hand. You didn't raise your hand.
I actually did physically have my hand up. I did actually physically have my hand up on that one. Well, a lot of what happens in a physical, you know, a car accident where your head, you know, goes through the windshield, comes back there, bounces off the, you know, sport bars or whatever, and it physically puts you in a coma. Well, that has to do with actual physical damage to the neurological system. In an induced coma, what the medications that they put you on basically shuts down a lot of your neurological for all of your vital end of your brain to repair without, and it's done for a couple of reasons. So there's no physical movement where if you have, you know, you had a rib that goes into a lung. Well, if you're tossing and turning at, you know, at night and all that kind of stuff, yeah, you can create more damage. But so basically all it does is it's a blocker. It blocks the firing of the neurons in the brain on a medically induced coma. On a damage-induced coma, that's a whole different world. It just depends on where the damage is. And the brain, as awesome as it is not at all very well at repairing itself. Most of your other organs are. But once your body's weaned off of that medication that blocks all your neurological transmitters and stuff and everything starts firing again, there's no damage in that section of the head. There's really not much that can happen to your physical body except for your spine in a trauma accident that would put you in a non-medically induced coma. It's all head trauma and C-spine stuff that can actually cause that. So.
And you're debating the when to turn off the life support, basically with situations like that as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and a lot of that comes into a morality issue too of quality of life. What, you know, and
who knows how much the person's suffering? That's one of the issues.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know if they can feel pain or not.
And well, it also depends on what part of the brain was damaged to induce the coma. Also, now it's becoming really common in medical practice to where they will do, you know, full brain scan analyses to figure out what portions of the brain are actually working, and clearly focus on the sections that deal with memory, motor functions, pain receptacles, all that, because when you don't have communication, you're basically talking to a corpse with a heartbeat and breath. You don't know exactly what they're experiencing. So, and you'll never know exactly what they're experiencing, but you can get a lot better gauge of what they're going through just by what sections of the brain are firing and when and during certain tests, like on a finger prick. Are you seeing spikes? Are you seeing any adrenaline peaks for certain things? Are you seeing dopamine being set out for points of pleasure with loved ones' voices and all that? So it's definitely being more thorough than, I don't know, this thing's pumping his blood and this thing's moving his chest up and down. Yeah, he's alive.
I agree. But at the same time, they've had some cases where people have bounced back, or else they would just pull the plug on everybody pretty much after a certain point, would they not?
Then it comes down to legalities and family, you know, family decision and family consent on certain things. Like, you know, doctors in the hospital, they don't want to kill anybody.
But more or less it comes down to money, does it not?
I don't know what the medical structure, how it works in Canada versus here, but if it was an unclaimed person And it depends on state and region that there's a predetermined amount of time that you have to keep somebody on and try and, you know, have somebody come forth and claim them as a family member or, you know, loved one or best friend or something like that. And then it comes into power of attorney and all that. But so I don't know if it's the same way in Canada and different provinces and states and stuff up there where laws are different, because you guys have community medicine.
I don't think that has much to do with
everything
legal.
That England does, we followed in towards like the medical and stuff like that. So we've adopted basically their system, majority of it anyway, because it seemed to work out pretty good.
Dennis, what were you saying? I don't know why you fell off here.
What I was saying was the difference between countries or legal systems or anything doesn't have jack shit to do with the fact that it's still a loved one. And I'm not sure what the legalities have to do with it. Once the documents are in place, and Ross, I'm going to pick on you if you don't mind, brother. Once Ross's uncle says, this is what I want done, even though they have government-run medical, I would hope that they would anticipate that there's a recovery for this. And they wouldn't, pretty much just unplug everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm sorry. I guess I wasn't clear on what I was talking about. Like, I was talking about if somebody came in unclaimed. Like, it wasn't like, you know, John Smith was in a car accident, and we called his wife Lucy, and she contacted the family, and then they brought him into the hospital. I'm talking about somebody who was, like, for example, if a homeless person ended up getting beaten in the street, and he didn't have any identification on him. That's, you know, a little bit more of what I was going for, other than just saying, oh, well, in Canada, even if the family's there, no, it's just because it's government medicine that we can't afford it, so we're just going to pull the plug. I was talking about somebody who didn't have anybody available or there or anybody who knew who that person was.
Now, Dennis, was your grandfather the only person that you did see out of your family back when you were a youngster?
No, I've seen three out of my family so far.
Oh, okay.
When I was 7, I saw my grandfather. When I was 16, I felt and caught a glimpse of my brother when he passed. And I'm not even sure of my age. Let's see, it was 3/27/06, so that puts it 06 to 13, that's 7 years back. 44, so I was 37 then. And I saw my father that night. So I've had three that I have seen come to me either when they passed or the day that they passed. My mother, I didn't get, as cold and crass as it sounds, I told my mother on Thursday that I wanted her to go. I wanted her to go be with my brother and go be with my grandfather. And stop hurting.
Sorry to hear that.
And if I keep my shit together through this,
it'll be a miracle.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, she was in misery. She was dying of cancer.
Yes.
She wanted to stay alive and be with my family that was still alive. And I opted to ask her to go to my family that had already passed. They were waiting on her. I saw them waiting on her.
Yeah, it's obviously you can tell it was extreme.
But I went to my mother on. I went to my mother's bedside. She was on morphine. She was no longer with us. I mean, truth is truth. She was no longer with us. I went to her bedside on Thursday and told her that it's okay. I'll take care of Dad as best I can. And you need to go be with Bud and Granddaddy and the rest of the family, and I'll deal with those of us that are left. And the following afternoon, I told my boss that I will probably not be in Monday because I don't expect my mom to make it. And 20 minutes later, I called him back and said, Mom just passed, and I'm not coming in next week. I mean, I saw it coming. I knew she was going to leave, but I also saw what she was going to. I saw that, like, family picture of all of our dead loved ones. I knew she was going to be okay. Just like I know that someday I'm going to die. I know what's on the other side. I know what I'm going to. I'm going to my family. So.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. And I hope you don't, you know, carry around any guilt with you and you're over that and you know that that was extremely
No, there's no guilt whatsoever. When I told my mom
That's good to hear,
my
man.
When I told my mom to go, I knew that she would be leaving me very shortly. It wasn't like I put a gun to her head and sent her to a miserable death. It was I sent her to the rest of my family and her family. So it wasn't a matter of guilt. It was just a feeling of loss. Now, you have to understand, when I grew up, my father was the, like, proverbial tyrant. If Dad said this, this is what it was. If you argued it, you stood a good chance that you were going to hit a brick wall and you weren't going to like it. Now, I'm not saying my father ever beat me or he was abusive or anything like that. He used a belt on me one time. I was 14, I think. And he was absolutely justified in that. I had broken into the little corner market with a couple of friends of mine, and we stole all the candy bars, and we stole Wild Irish Rose, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening, never, ever, ever, and I will repeat this and I will strengthen this. Never eat Reese cups and Wild Irish Rose wine because it will make your stomach go, fuck all of this. I want nothing more. Yeah.
What the hell?
So Wild Irish Rose and Reese cups, while they may be wonderful by themselves, they absolutely suck together, just so you know. But, yeah, I mean, my father didn't lay a hand on me for doing that, even though he had to come pick me up at the police department. But he did lay a hand on me about a month later. Actually, he laid a belt to me about a month later when I was still grounded. And I broke grounding, and we lived right on the river. He hollered for me. I didn't answer. He hollered again. I didn't answer. Finally, I don't know, 30 minutes or an hour later or whatever, I came back. He was like, where the hell you been? And I went down yonder, you know, down the riverbank. And he went, well, I called you and called you and called you, and you know you were grounded right to the riverbank right in front of the house. You were not allowed to be any further. So you need to take the position, and you need to take your punishment. Okay. Honestly, I didn't know what, quote-unquote, the position was because I'd never been in that position before. My father had never beat me. He had never whipped my ass. So he actually had to tell me what the hell I was supposed to do. He hit me one time with my belt, or with his belt, leather belt, hit me one time on my ass. And my brother actually came across. He was 4 years older than me. My brother actually came across the room and shoulder tackled my father to the ground and said, you will never hit him again. And the fight was on. And I do mean the fight was on. They were swinging punches and everything else. But that was my brother. He had always been my guardian. When I lost him, I lost my guardian. As far as my parents, when I lost them later on in life, then I lost my best friends. So all of them have come to me in time, to get back to your question. All of them have come back to me in time. But to hear from the other side, from your immediate loved ones, is very freaky because it becomes a question in your own mind. Is this them, or is it my mind wanting it to be them? Now, the human mind is one of the strongest things in the world. It is the strongest thing. Science can't even duplicate it. So how do you know that it was them versus it was just your own mind creating them coming back to you?
Well, and that's what I was talking about, you know, where that falls into the 10-day theory of was it an actual apparition, or was it you wanting that last view, that last thought, that last memory? You know, I mean, it is actually amazing when you get into it that. And this is no bullshit. There is a lab, and I can't remember what state it's in, but there's a lab that actually creates an exact replica of a star. You look out your window, if it's not cloudy, you look up there and you say, wow, that's far away. There's a lab that creates stars. It's only for, you know, a second or two, and it's for a study to see what is actually happening, and they're doing it with helium and nitrogen and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, they are in the lab creating stars. Well, if you do happen to be able to see one right now, how far that damn thing is away to what is sometimes sitting right next to us. We can recreate something that's hundreds of thousands of light years and in some cases billions of light years away. We can recreate that in a lab. But we can't actually have the answer in a lab of what's directly sitting next to us because we can't see it. that kind of blows my mind a little bit. There's more, and also, I mean, this is another thing that blows my mind too. This is a little bit off subject, but how the hell do we know enough about a star to recreate one in a lab as far as temperature and heat and material and chemical and all that stuff goes, more than we know what's in the deep ocean and how many species are seen and all that kind of... It's right... I mean, you drive any direction, you're going to hit water, but no.
And we can't recreate a spirit. What the hell? This is bullshit.
Well, here's also another thing about the whole life after death and all that. All right, in the lab, what has been tested with volunteers' OKs is to actually, and it was terminally ill patients that volunteered for this, is they tested to where their last breath was taken on a scale, hooked up to meters, all that kind of stuff, to see what physically happens to the body when it passes. Well, this is where kind of a heated debate comes in. The human body at the point of passing in this experiment, and I know it was done a few times, I don't think it's been recreated from what I've been able to find, over and over, nobody's carried it on anymore, whether it's moral issues or what, but the human body loses 8 grams of mass at the point of passing. So here comes the conspiracy end of it. There's a whole ton of people out there saying it's the soul leaving the body. And then there's other people saying, well, it's 8 grams. Well, truthfully, and this is where you can draw your own conclusion from this. When I started thinking about it, I'm like, all right, energy does have mass and volume and weight and all that stuff. It does. But so does when you have a human body with functioning lungs, with blood circulating through it, when people tell you, oh yeah, when you die you void your bowels and all that kind of stuff. Well, it doesn't happen instantly. It takes a little bit. But in most cases, some cases it's just, hey, bladder was full, yeah, he peed all over himself when he passed. But all right, so with breathing, blood flow, and just the electrical impulses that are going through your body, once that ceases to being processed anymore, once that last breath exits out of your lungs, your body is going to lose mass. Because everything becomes stagnant at that point.
But air doesn't weigh anything.
It
damn sure doesn't take up 3/4 of a gram.
How are you going to tell me air doesn't weigh anything?
Air weighs nothing. I mean, not granted, you have some weight to the moisture that may be in the air. I mean, I know the exact experiment that you're talking about, and everything. Everybody that passed at that moment, and they actually tested 70-plus people, and all of them lost the same exact amount. So one breath of air is 0.78 grams or whatever the damn number was that they came up with.
No, air is, well, the whole test was the human body loses 8 grams. At the point of passing.
Okay.
Which, Dennis, and you know this as well as I do with your medical background too, if you don't have blood circulation, like, you ever hear the term dead weight? That's partially one because it just doesn't cooperate when you try and move somebody around who has passed. which actually makes them feel heavier,
that would
not
be
lighter.
The fat-ass that I had to pluck out of the car crash or whatever. That would be dead weight. Sorry.
Yeah.
That sounded so crass.
Let's see. Well, with losing
or
passed
out drunk, one or the other.
Do what, Howard?
No, I said, or passed out drunk, that'd be dead weight as well.
True, but there's a lot of physiology that can go to it that can't explain it. But at the same time, it isn't like due to people's body size, body shape, all that kind of stuff. What their stomach contents were. I mean, there's nothing circulating anymore. That it could be 8 grams of energy loses your system, or leaves your system. There was never a complete 100% deduction of what caused that 8 grams.
But at the same time, I think that because nobody really has the answer is the reason why we find the paranormal so interesting, and we continue to look for that answer. And we will continue to until hopefully we find it sometime in our lifetime or somebody will shortly after. But you got to believe that the answer is going to come sooner rather than much, much later, the way things are changing all of a sudden.
Oh, no, I do. And, you know, everybody, and this is for a lot of our friends who have been on them and stuff, and we get behind-the-scenes information, like the TV shows and all that stuff that you watch. And everybody who's interested in the paranormal will watch them or work in it, have worked on them. One, you get on TV what the producers allow and what goes on the cutting room floor and what they say should be presented. Not what the people who are actually involved on these would have on there. And, I mean, it's a lack of artist control. So if you knock the shows, cool, whatever, you like them, don't use them as a Bible is the other moral of the story. But along with that also, the one thing I do love about the shows and all the new shows that are coming up and all the ones that have passed but have had some great information, they're keeping it alive to be more of a household name for people like us to try and figure out those answers. So, shit, Dennis, when you started doing this, if you told anybody you're a paranormal investigator, what would happen to you?
Well, when I first started doing it, they would look at you and laugh their ass off. And, well, then when I first started telling them that I could remote view, they wouldn't laugh their ass off. They would look at me like, how can I get this son of a bitch into handcuffs and get him into a rubber room without him attacking us? I mean,
and then they'd bring the I Love Myself jacket, and you get to hug yourself for a very long time.
Hopefully not too long.
Yeah, and, you know, and there's people, like, around me locally in Chicago that have been doing this for decades, like Michael Esposito, who's just phenomenal. If you don't know who he is, look him up as far as audio stuff goes.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Ursula Bielski, who's my dear friend, Dale Kazmarek, who's been in this for a long time, we lost a great, great, great person as far as scientific research and all that stuff. His name was Richard Crowe. He was a phenomenal, phenomenal person and had a ton to contribute and did contribute a ton to it and had a shit ton more that I knew would have probably been on the horizon but was never able to. I mean, his historical background, his, like, everything. Richard was a great guy.
Yeah, I would have to look him up. I'm not familiar with him.
Yeah, it's Richard, C-R-O-W-E. So he's, and, you know, all of our friends who are still active in it and looking for, you know, the answers and have a lot more resources than just, the normal group of friends who have the same interest and get together and develop their own theories and thoughts. And, yeah, exactly. And resources to use as far as history goes and as far as, analysis and all that stuff. But it doesn't mean that it's not on the right, it's not on the right path, it's not on the right track. I think it'll definitely become harder if Hollywood or any of these production companies just say, you know what, the ghost thing's over, screw it, let's bring in more hillbillies with duck calls. And not knocking Duck Dynasty, because those guys are awesome and have done a great job, but hillbilly seems to be the thing that's in right now. So, but if that overtakes the paranormal, yeah, it's definitely going to be harder for all of us to get into places and still have the acceptance, because Hollywood looked at it like it was a joke and said, it's not worth airing anymore.
Well, I mean, most of I think what you make of it and your opinion is just as good as anybody's. And the more people you talk to and listen to, you decide in the end what information you're going to gather from that person.
True.
Because no one's going to shove stuff down your throat. So, you know, whatever they're presenting, you know, you take it from there and keep what's good in your opinion, and what's not good, you just got to forget about it.
Yeah.
But it's up to you to decide, so everybody will continue to have their own opinion. But I didn't mean to hijack the show on you guys, and it was nice to talk to you guys, Dennis and Matt. And, I listen to the show. It's entertaining. And just like that story Dennis was talking about, amongst other things, you can expect the unexpected when you listen to your radio show for a couple of hours. And, it's unscripted, and that's what I take out of each and every show. It's always, there's always something I learn, and there's always something entertaining, and that's why I will continue to listen to you guys from here on forward. So it's been a pleasure, and I know you got a couple of paranormal investigators there as well that have yet to chime in. So I'm going to listen to the rest of the show, and thanks for having me on, and I look forward to learning some more stuff from you guys.
Yeah, Ross, I definitely appreciate the compliment, and that I don't. This one ended up to get into a little more serious than we normally do, and it's not that we try and be not serious when we're talking, but and I, like I said, the compliment means a lot, because we do try and give information in an entertaining manner to where we're not just sitting there going, and the reason that I think that this is because of this molecular structure and this, and it's something that's definitely on the forefront. What do you think? Oh, well, that's a great theory. Nobody wants to listen to that. So,
and that's why I listen to the show. You guys keep it real.
Yeah. And, yes, nothing is scripted, and who knows what the hell is going to come out of Dennis in my mouth half the time.
Expect the unexpected, that's what I say. Thanks a lot for having me on. Dennis, we'll chat again, and keep up the good work, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on.
No problem, Ross.
Hey, thanks
have a good
for
night.
Joining us. Hey,
goodbye.
Ross. Have a great night, brother. All right.
Hold on. Dennis, we have to do it. You know what I'm talking about.
What?
I said we have to do it, and you know what I'm talking about. Hi, Naomi.
What? Hi, Naomi. Yes, and I was trying to get... Now, I have a special guest that's trying to call in, but I'm not sure what happened. Matt, I think you will love this guest. On the
on the is there life after death, this would definitely be one of the, like, top three people that I would want to talk to as far as is there life after death.
I'm really, like, hit that, since we're running down to about 24 minutes now, hit that 630 on screen and find out who it is.
Yes, that would be, well, maybe, I don't know. Doesn't look like the, no. Oh, well, that might be, unless she's on the crack pipe. 630 area code, welcome to Full Spectrum Radio. I'm Dennis, how are you?
Hi, guys, I'm well, how are you?
We're doing wonderful, and that sounds like the voice of Bishop Christina Reiki.
What's
yes,
up here?
It is. How are you guys? I missed the beginning and it was killing me, so I had to write down and listen to the rest.
You lied to me, darling.
I looked
at Facebook and yes, you did. I looked at Facebook and I saw 809 and that was the first numbers, and next thing I know you're on 630.
Oh,
you,
I wrote the rest of my number. I didn't give you my area
out of the
code.
Numbers. I fingered the snot out of the numbers.
When I die, I'll go to hell. That's just the way it's going to go.
That's all right. I promise you this, sweetheart. As sweet of a person as you are, I promise I will hold the door for you because, something tells me I'm probably going to be there before all my friends anyway. So I will be the maitre d' and I will hold the door for you. And I will even go beyond that. I will save one of the best tables in the house for you.
I'll tell you something. We're going to have the best table in the cafeteria out there, I swear.
And
the table everyone wants to sit at.
We're definitely going to have the sweetest people in the world there. Without a doubt.
Hey, Christina, tell me if I'm wrong on this. Dennis, and yeah, I definitely agree with that. We're going to be the cool kids table.
Yes.
But
I'm cool as hell.
I like that. With the way the past couple of days have been, I'm actually in a rush to get there because it's warm. Fuck this weather.
I don't know. If you like it warm, then it's cold there. That's kind of the way it works, unfortunately.
Yeah, shit. and you definitely have the inside opinion, you have the inside information on that one.
Matt, watch your language, for God's sake. You have a fucking bishop on the phone with us. Oh, crap.
Stop fucking swearing at me.
I am so sorry.
Like I said, Dennis will be holding the door for both of us.
Yep. Hello, my name is Doorstop. How are you? Come on in. My name is Doorstop. How are you?
Yeah, guess what? My name's Matt, and what do you think the joke is I get about that all the time? Oh, doormat. So Dennis will hold it for you as you walk all over me on the way in.
There you go. All right. Now, I'm going to dive into this because Matt just wants to bullshit, and we got about 20 minutes left. Bishop Christina Reiki. I have to ask you, tonight's topic is there life after death, and how can we prove it?
Well, I had a near-death experience when I was 9, and it sort of set me on a quest to kind of understand, because for me, if there's life after death, then there's definitely a God. Right? You can believe in a God and no afterlife, but but not afterlife and no God. They're kind of tied together. And so I spent years reading about near-death experiences, in fact, mind sight. And it's about the near-death experiences of those born blind who could see when they passed. It's a very interesting book. Again, that would be one way to prove it. If someone born blind were to have a near-death experience and come back, those are what really did it for me. When people passed away and came back with information. There was one guy who was a mechanic. He dropped out of middle school. He comes back and he can talk about planks constantly. there were people who passed on who were dead set atheists and came back and became monks. There's something about that. And there's so much there. It goes story after story after story about it. But that's what did it for me. That's what confirmed it for me. If someone is hooked up to machines and their heart, not just thus, but their brain dead, and yet they can tell you exactly what the doctors and nurses said and did at that point and who was in the room, and it's astonishing. And for me, I know that it's experiential. I know that scientists wouldn't accept it as proof because it's anecdotal, but that's what did it for me. That clinched it for me.
So let me ask you this. You have, like, master's degrees. You have, so much background in the religious aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just your education and life experience, but biblically and educationally as well, tells you that there is something after this, like walking around the earth, and you know, I mean, even the most mundane, sorrowful, sad, pardon the expression, piece of shit that has no contribution to life. There's something for them even after they pass away?
Yes. Yes, there is. There's something for everyone. In my own background, I ascribe to the concept of purgatory. Not as a third option, but as I call it, heaven's mud room, where you kind of get yourself all washed up to get in. A lot of people talk about hell, for example. Is there life after death is the first question, and then when people become convinced of that, the second question is, well, what the hell happens when you die? and who gets what? And everybody, life is a school where there are no stupid questions, and even if you never have all the answers, you still get to graduate. And like I said, scientifically, I could go into that, and it would scare people because it involves math and words like quantum physics and cosmology and stuff, so I won't do that. But when you really look into it, there's a great book called Life After Life, and it was not Moody's book. It was written by a PhD in biological chemistry, or there's a word for it, I don't remember. He was diagnosed with leukemia halfway through the book, and by the end of the book, he ends with a completely different conclusion than he started with. That's the type of stuff that does it for me. In addition to which, you know, I'm a medium, so that kind of clinches it for me too, because I've had experiences where it was not telepathy. The person who passed on told me something that the living person did not know, or that the passed on person did not know in life. And that's another thing that often makes me go, huh, that sort of thing.
All right, well, Let me ask you this, Bishop. Christina, I love you to death. You know that, darling.
I love you too, hon.
Oh, crap.
Not a good start, but go ahead.
Do what? I missed something. I sat down and yanked a damn earpiece right out of my ear.
Yeah, and then all we heard was, oh, crap. And I said, that's not a good start, but go ahead.
Hi. God, I hate my life. Well, no. This is really not the person I want to say that to, is it? No. How do I address you?
Christine is fine. You're my friend.
Okay. I'm good with that because I love you to death. I think you are one of the absolutely most sweetest people I've ever met in my life. We've had dozens of conversations and just, anyway, I've had friends in the past 2 weeks, probably 4 loved ones have passed on. How can we give them assurance on this side that their loved ones are okay? Now, I know you have the, you know, you got the golden ticket and, you know, you got the hookup and you can talk to the other side. How can we give those on this side a little bit of peace of mind and assurance that everything's okay?
Well, the first one is to sort of introduce them to the near-death experience studies that really, when I've given people certain books, they've read it and they've been like, I have no fear of death anymore. The other is to hook up with a medium who can just take 5 minutes to find that one piece of information that convinces them that there was no way that they were guessing or just happened upon that. When I do this, and, you know, sometimes I'll do it for a donation to raise money for the church, but I don't charge. I help people who come to me and are involved with me, and I just do it for them. You know, they'll ask me a question, I'll shoot them a message, because the purpose of this gift is threefold. It's to decrease our fear of death. It is to give us faith that there is an afterlife, and it's to help us find God's purpose for our life. And those are the two things that I find help people when they're ready to know. When someone passes away, sometimes the person, that's the last thing on their mind. You know, did they go someplace? Sometimes it's the first. It depends on the person. But when they're at that point, those are the two things that I think help the most. On Mondays, I do a call-in show where people can ask a question for, you know, for free. They just call in and ask me. And sometimes I had one person call about a loved one who had passed away. And over the course of 3 weeks, every single family member called. They didn't know I knew who this person was. I'm like, there can't be, you know, 6 Bobs in this area code who passed away. I thought to be related. But those are the two things that can help. A very dear friend of mine I went to high school with, her son was in a difficult situation, states and states away. And after finally, you know, reconciling and everything, he was tragically hit by a car and killed. And when I found out, immediately called right to her and started telling her what he had to say and gave her a lot of peace. And just, you know, hearing her say that other people who have lost children or loved ones, I immediately call if I get anything. And they say it just kind of eases, not the pain, but the fear. It eases the fear. So they know the separation is not permanent. And we take that love with us wherever we go. Those relationships never end.
I'm catching shit in the chat room, but I'm good with it. I absolutely, now, everybody that has ever met me knows that I don't go in a church. One, we're afraid of the spontaneous combustion, and two, the building collapse. yet I will listen to you because you, I don't know, you actually know the same things that I think, and that's what you preach. I absolutely love the opinions and the way that you have so much candor. You're just, this is what it is. But,
well, I'm glad you appreciate that. It kind of pisses most people off.
What the hell do you think I do? Oh, yeah, I make friends left and right. Oh, everybody just loves me.
You know, there's something beautiful about people who know what they believe. And even if it doesn't agree with me, I love meeting people who are like, I think this is what it is. And I'm like, awesome, at least you've thought about it. That means the world.
That's another thing, too, is that people, especially not only in just religion, but in this field, are so quick to just say what they think because of what they see from other people, other than having their own opinion and speaking out about their own opinion, and
right.
or having their own belief and standing behind that belief.
Exact thing with religion is, this is my definition of religion, one's own personal journey to the divine as they understand it in a community of those who are journeying. And that's it. That's what church is. It's the community of people looking. And if you're on the road, then I'll help you, even if it's not my road. It doesn't matter to me. As long as you're on the road, that's the great thing. When you meet people who are like, oh, there's a road? I'm like, yeah, just take a couple steps. You'll see. But that's how I feel about you, Dennis, and Matt, and anybody who's just searching. If you're in the game, then great. As long as you've done that work and you're self-aware and you're trying to find the answers, I love that. That makes me so happy. And when I meet people who aren't, that's my job, is to kind of get them to be aware of themselves and that there is a road, and then just kind of let them start walking.
Well, Christina, let me ask you this.
Hey, Dennis, real quick, we can continue this. We got about 6 minutes left, so I do want to give a huge thank you out to everybody who did tune in tonight, who participated. Howard, Ross, Christina. I knew when I posted about the life after death thing, there was two things that were going to happen. You're going to go awesome or oh shit. So I didn't know which side of the fence that you were on with that, but No, I really do want to thank everybody, and I hope I didn't piss anybody off. And yes, I did kind of play devil's advocate this evening, but it doesn't have to do with my own personal beliefs. It's just sharing my knowledge of the other side of the story, not the other side, but the other side of the story and what's been going on with it. And I said, don't chastise me. If you want to, cool. That's your opinion, and I support it.
Feel free. Feel free. You have your right to your opinion. If you want to give either one of us shit for anything that we said tonight, then, well, that's your opinion. You're welcome to it. Christina, I so much want to thank you for joining us, and do not hang up. Even though,
okay.
Even when we say we're going into archives, don't hang up, because I want to continue this conversation. And I have a question for you that, although at this point nothing is going to be earth-shattering, ladies and gentlemen, just in case you're tuning in late, we have Bishop Christina Reiki joining us. Absolute sweetheart. But make sure to tune in on next Monday. Catch CPR Dennis, CPR Matt on Facebook, CPR Dennis and CPR Matt on Twitter. Yeah, that thing. And catch Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers on Facebook and .com.
And
Christina,
Christina, also, in the last couple of minutes of live, do you want to throw out any information of links or your Monday shows or anything like that?
Sure, thank you. If you just search for Charismatic Universalist Church on Blog Talk, we have a Saturday evening show at 7 and a Sunday evening show at 7. And then on Monday evenings, I'm on Inspire Radio on Blog Talk at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's called A Question of Faith, and you can call in to me and my nephew, who is also a talented psychic reader, and you can ask any question you like, and I'll try to help you on here.
Well, you can guarantee that you're going to have a caller pretty much every Monday. But Dennis, we're going to cancel Mondays because I have another obligation.
Yeah, you need all the help you can get, brother. And our show on Monday nights ain't going to help you.
No, not at all. Unleashed, no. But
Mostly because Monday night is full spectrum. Unleashed.
It does give me time to vent, though. But thank you, everybody. Yes, we're going to archive in probably the next 60 seconds or so. I definitely think there it is. I definitely thank everybody for listening and tuning in. And yes, catch us Monday if we are going to have a show, because Dennis and I might actually cancel Monday to listen to George Lopez for the amazing show that he has going on. So I think we might have to do that. But thank you. God bless. And have a good night, everybody. Highly, highly appreciated.
Here's the really cool thing. We still have the majority of our show right now is locked into the board. Christina, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
There we go. See? You still with us?
Yeah. I believe Howard is still with us also.
Hi,
Howard.
Yeah.
There we go. See, that's the majority of our show right now. Now, the listeners that were tuned in, they can still catch us off of archive. But we have the important parties in this right now. Christina, thank you ever so much for joining us. But I do have a question that may or may not go deep into your religious field.
Okay.
But I have to ask it. Once my body dies and that last breath has escaped my chest and that last pulse has left my heart, what can I expect?
Well, based on my reading of thousands of years of cases and dying and my work in hospice, I used to help those who are dying in their homes. In the days before you pass away, if it's a slow death, you start to detach from the world. Things stop mattering to you. You start to be more daydreamy. And then the veil between this world and the next gets very thin. You suddenly start, you know, feeling like people from your past who have passed away are in the room. When you get to the point of taking your last breath, the usual report, and I'm just going to give you, I'm going to walk you through it based on sort of an aggregate thing. You'll go into a dark space, but it'll occur to you that you're dead, but you're awake. And at that point, when you make that realization, and the dark space is very peaceful and calm, there's no pain, it's very warm, a light will suddenly appear, and you'll start rushing toward the light. When you reach the other side, there will be a being of light, and they call him whom you wish, and he will greet you. You will feel nothing but perfect, unconditional love from this person. He is not God. He's a representative. And you will then stand with him and suddenly be transported to your life moment by moment. You will feel the consequences of every single one of your actions, good and bad, throughout all of time. So yelling at the clerk, flipping off that guy, we often do things and we don't realize how far our actions extend, even our good ones. So you'll go through that and you'll feel it. You'll feel the clerk as you're yelling at them. You'll feel the little kid as you're helping him get back on his bicycle when he fell. You'll feel those good feelings. You'll feel those bad feelings. When it's over, you'll be asked, what was the purpose and what did you learn? And at that point, loved ones, deceased loved ones will come and meet you, and you'll start to go through the process of letting go, of losing your ego. And there are theories that say that on that side you will be able to plug into the lives of anyone throughout the universe, throughout all of time. So you can sort of, you know, plug in and live Lincoln's life as if you were him, because you'll have sudden access to all of time and space and all knowledge. You will also continue to go through processes. So, you know, there are many levels to this. That's just the first one, and it's a lot like ours, but nothing like ours. And but you will feel no pain. You will be just feel nothing but love and light and relationship. If you subscribe to reincarnation, you will make a new soul contract with those that you'll have contact with after. And then at some point you might come back, you might not. I don't believe everybody comes back. But that's as far as I know. I don't know much more than that. And I don't even know that. That's just based on experience and reading across religions. Now, that's the experience, the religion, the theology. That's where the labels come in. Who is that being of life for me? Jesus. What is that life review for me? That's purgatory. What is that place of light for me? That's heaven. That sort of thing. But you could call it whatever you want. We're all going to have a very similar experience.
All right.
Well,
now, can I make it?
Hey, Dennis, real quick, if I can side note for a second, because I don't know, one, how deep this is going to get, and two, how long Christina has, but Christina, there is a private residence in Franklin Park that I'm going to need you on.
Oh, okay. That would be fine.
Yeah, we've actually talked about that. Christina, do you trust in the fact that when I said that I can remote it, I did? I would love to have you in this place.
Okay. Well, if you give me, you know, some dates, we can certainly set something up. And if you want, it depends on, you can't tell me what's going on or anything, but
nope.
You guys make the call. I totally trust you. If you want me to go in blindfolded, that's fine. You make the call.
No, it's, well, and obviously even in archive, I'm not going to discuss this, so I'll call you about it later. But, the just to give you a quick idea, the person who lives there has abilities and has had.
Mm-hmm. Minimal.
So.
Minimal.
But that's where it's, like, out of my realm. But,
okay.
I'll give you more. I really don't want to say too much on here because people can still hear it. But, yeah, no, there is one, and we're probably looking at the second week of November. Weekend of November.
As far as I know, I don't have anything any weekend in November other than Thanksgiving. So, just let me know, and we'll figure it out. I'd be happy to help.
Yeah, I'll call you and fill you in with more details and all that stuff. But certain things I know, but and for everybody listening, yes, this is what you call outsourcing. this is outsourcing. If you don't know it, don't get involved and talk to people who actually truly do.
Well, no, for those that don't understand, if you get in over your head, this is how you ask for help from those that
and
are
help
able
somebody.
To help you. Don't go in and go, oh, holy shit, you have a demon, and run out the place and leave the homeowner or the client with their hands in the air going, what the fuck do I do now? No, if you don't know how to fix it, you contact Matt, you contact myself, you contact people like Christina, and you fix it. This is what it's about. It's not about I'm going in and I'm going to go get some great evidence and then you run away going, I don't know what the fuck to do. If you don't know what the fuck to do, contact people that do. Don't
Amen.
Just leave the homeowner hung. Don't just leave the resident hung. You find the contact. And yeah, I was starting to get pissed.
I'll even personally put it out there to where, you know what, with all the people that Dennis and I have met and all that kind of stuff, anonymity is number one. Secondly, if you need and you don't know and you don't have the contacts, talk to me about it, and I'll find the contacts for you.
Good. And if you're on the East Coast, I promise you, as you can tell, Christina, what did it take me to get you to come on air with us tonight? Just a simple message?
Yeah, I just saw your ad and went, let me go check it out. And then you messaged me, and I was like, yeah, I'm coming. There's no excuse nowadays not to reach out. It's so easy to find people who know. Or if you're not sure, like if I were to walk into a place that someone called me into and said, this is over my head, then maybe I know people because of my position. So,
I have the contacts. If you're on the East Coast, I can make it happen. Don't go in and don't hurt the homeowner more than they're already hurt.
Yeah.
Touch base with me, and we'll make it happen. And we can make it right one way or another. But, Christina, I have to ask you, and this has been on my mind from the time that this whole show started. You don't know my history.
No.
I'll give you a small snippet. And ladies and gentlemen, you're going to catch this probably firsthand right now. When I was 16, my brother killed himself.
I'm very sorry.
One of the biggest things that has always hurt me was there wasn't a goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to talk to that side and get a goodbye and I love you, any of those things?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You can certainly do it on your own. I tell everybody they're just an eyelash away. But, Dennis, if you want to get together and do just talk to your brother with me there, I don't channel or anything, but I can hear them. And I just tell you what they're saying, and you can talk back. I've done that for people, and it's been almost exclusively in the case of suicide. And I'd be happy to get together with you, and we can give it a try if you can come through.
Well, I'd be more than happy to do that. Christina, I've got to say, the only thing that I can truly say about you is you have never been bullshit. You have always been, this is what it is. I absolutely love you to death. You are one of the truest people that I've ever met. Matt is right up there in your category. And,
aww.
Yeah. Aww.
Howard, I love you. Since you're not giving me love, I just want to let you know that I love you too.
Oh, thank you. I got my love earlier. I'm all good.
But, no, Howard, I'll tell you what. You're no bullshit. I give you kudos, but you and I don't go back as far as Matt do, and Christina, Howard, you can't touch the bases that this woman touches. The feelings, the emotions, everything that this woman touches, she's dead on. If you don't know Bishop Christina Reiki, you need to know her.
Oh, I take no offense, brother. No offense at all.
I do. I'm just kidding.
Christina Howard O'Dell. He's a team leader in my area. Great guy. But Christina, I got to give you kudos. I've never felt so much comfort just out of random talking like I do with you. For some reason, I just feel that comfort.
That's very sweet. I'm really glad. I like hearing that, just not because it strokes my ego, but because it helps to know that I'm doing what I was told to do. And that, you know, sometimes I do it right. That's good to know.
The hell
no,
was that?
What was what?
The laughter.
Mine?
Yeah, Christina laughed.
Okay.
It wasn't me.
Thank goodness, because out of nowhere, I just got laughter. And I'm like, what the hell?
Residual energy. I'll have some for you.
Yeah, it's not from Dennis's jokes, but.
No, listen, you have to understand, Matt and I did a program one night with a couple of authors, and the last hour was spent, we could actually hear voices that were not connected with us, that weren't online with us, and just out of nowhere, we would hear names.
It was Kimberly and Karen Vance Hammond.
Exactly.
Who were our guests that night, and we were talking about it. And the whole hour. I mean, we took up until it cut us off. And then I called Dennis right afterwards. That was 3 hours on the phone. The last hour was like basically an EVP session. I was running the board where I was isolating each individual person. And Karen's name came through a couple times when all of us were on mute. It was just weird. It was definitely weird. And it only happened during the archive. It didn't happen during the show, only archive.
Yeah. Now, I have the ability right now. I have Matt, myself, Christina, Howard, and Naomi has been listening to us, but she's been muted the whole time. But I can mute everybody. And the phone line should be dead, correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we still heard names called out. Karen's name, by the way. But if I mute everybody through the board and I turn your, if I turn your phone cold, where your phone doesn't transmit into the board, I shouldn't hear jack shit. But, yeah, we spent an hour trying to figure out what was going on. That essentially it turned into an hour-long EVP session. It was really cool.
That is bizarre.
Well, that brings me to a point, Christina. What truly is an EVP, in your opinion, as... Now, I'm not really sure how to say it. you're very well knowledge in the Bible. You're very well knowledge in the spirit world. If we catch an EVP, what truly is it?
You know, I have a lot of theories, but I think that when you talk about the paranormal, I think it's a giant catcher's mitt for phenomena that have nothing to do with each other. The dead who are breaking through. But also there's time rifts, there's parallel universes. I mean, there's so much that could be happening. I've heard EVPs that very clearly were the spirits of those who had passed away who are reaching out. I've heard EVPs where the EVP, and I was in the room, said what I was thinking and someone else's voice. I was in the room with an investigator. I said
nothing. But you hadn't said it out loud.
Right. You could hear me talking to another investigator who ruined the entire session because she just kept talking and talking. She was let go from the team. But she kept talking and asking me questions and asking me questions. And you can hear me, you know, as quiet as I can be, answering her questions. And as I'm answering her questions, you hear someone talk over me saying, "My God, I'd run from her screaming." Clear as, I mean, class A. There's no question about what this thing is saying. And then at one point, you hear me, you know, another investigator say something to me, and I respond and yawn, and you hear the EVP say, "I just want to go home." So, is it an imprint? Because I know I can push out. I break everything from cars to computers when I'm frustrated or tired. So, I don't know. I've seen evidence that it could be so many things that it really, for me, it depends on the situation, what I think it is.
Yeah. Now, I have to match that with this past weekend. We had a girl that joined us. Not really a investigator, but a tag-along,
mm-hmm.
and we just couldn't shut her up. And now I don't have any EVPs that say, "God, shut her up," or anything like that, but I think we've all had that new member that you just couldn't silence.
Right.
But to catch that would be phenomenal.
I have those EVPs, and I'd be happy to share the ones I can. I don't know how tied my hands would be with that. I have to check. But, yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. I'm trying to remember. I think we were given permission, so I should be able to send those to you. As long as they're not released publicly. But yeah, some of these are, like I told you, the only thing that makes sense is that it was imprinting me, the recorder, or that whatever was there was sort of saying what I was thinking. I don't know. But the thoughts were mine, and I remember having them. So it's very strange.
I honestly cannot think of a time that EVPs said my thought. Otherwise, it would have been, you know, probably bleeped out, but that's beside the point.
Hey, I got 30 EVPs that say, ah, fuck. In different languages or something.
Well, no. Real quick, Howard, I know you've been hanging in the cut and listening and everything. Were there any questions that you had on any of this in the last hour and a half? You've just been sitting there quiet?
No, surprisingly, I've actually sat here to be quiet, actually listening. No, I'm enjoying the entire show.
I didn't know if there's any questions you had for Christina or anything on the religious aspect of it, or...
no, I feel that she comes from the same point I do. I mean, I'm a grandson of two Methodist preachers, but I'm not Methodist. I'm angelic. So listening to her and Dennis talk, no, I'm right on target with her. I agree with her completely.
Oh, and this is why we outsource.
and if my talkative mouth can jump in again, yeah, like anybody else has had much to say. Christina, I have to ask you. In the television world, who all have you had direct contact with?
In the television world?
Yes. And how have you changed their way of thinking on things? Because I'll tell you, you have changed my way of thinking so much that I couldn't even give you an idea.
You know, I've had contact with a lot of people, and this is going to sound so terrible. I don't really watch paranormal shows. People, like, nudge me after I've spoken to someone. They're like, do you know who that was? I'm like, no. I have no idea who that is. And then I find out later. I've met Jay and Grant. I didn't get to talk to them extensively. I did meet Scott Greenwald, who's on Paranormal Paparazzi. And he and I actually became really close, yeah. And he's hysterical, but, you know, for some reason he just took to me, and he said he was talking about me on a radio show this week on, The Buzz, I think. So I don't know that, I don't know if I changed his way of thinking on anything. I think he just enjoyed my company, or so I enjoyed his. So I have met people, and every time I go to a convention, I wind up like sitting at John Tenney's table for 2.5 hours talking. But
yeah, John and you are right up the same alley.
Yeah. This is my friend Dawn said. She said, when you two get together, I love sitting there and listening. I couldn't repeat a damn thing any of you said, but it is so cool to listen to. We were at a convention, and he and I started talking. And I didn't notice, but like an hour later, I just happened to look around. And there were like 15 people standing there listening intently. I guess this is interesting.
Well, I do have to say this. Scott Greenwald is very brilliant. I absolutely love the way his mind works. And I put he and you in the same category in the fact that you both stimulate my mind, but in different manners. You stimulate my mind towards I want to go read the Bible. He stimulates my mind and then I gotta go like soap and scrub my brain out now.
Oh, I know. Oh, he's so funny.
But he's so damn smart. I mean,
oh yeah.
Anything that you want to talk about, Scott can talk about with you.
All right, with and what Christina is talking about was Fox City's Huracan in Appleton, Wisconsin. And Scott was there, Christina was there, obviously. Scott is a ordained minister, which most people don't believe that, but no, he actually is. He wanted to marry a couple of his friends and went through the processes and got his thing, his certificate. Well, Christina was there with her, I can't remember the actual term for it, the white collar.
Oh, yeah, it's just a clergy collar.
Yeah. I thought that was a different name for it, but I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking, but so Scott didn't have one, so we got him one. And
well, he offered to buy mine. I'm like, no, you know how expensive these things are.
And Scott also, and just to give you an idea of Scott, of how people don't take him 100% serious until you have a serious conversation with him, is he had brought down from his room his ironing board and coffee maker, and was selling them at his booth as haunted.
He ironed his shorts out front on the street corner.
And she's talking about skivvies, not like shorts you wear to the beach. Shorts you'd wear under the shorts to the beach. Christina, I don't know if you saw this or not, but he carried the iron and ironing board into that Asian convention that was going in across the hallway.
Yes.
And he started doing the same thing in the middle of the hallway while somebody was giving a speech.
Oh, no.
He's like, no, I'm fine. And he's sitting there ironing, fake ironing underwear.
No, you missed it. He interrupted their conference. Their speaker was on stage. And said, I iron. Anybody need ironing? I iron. Anybody? He walked in while they had somebody up on the stage talking. God, cough out the bad lung, Christina. Cough out the bad lung. But no. Scott told me that he walked in while some dude was up on stage, and he announced, I iron. Anybody need ironing? I iron.
And the whole crowd just turned around, and, like, everybody in that whole complete auditorium, and we're talking about a conference center. We're not talking about, like, a small little room off to the side. No, it was a stage with a big backdrop. It was full. And they all turned around and looked at him. And half of the people busted out laughing. Half of them didn't know what the hell to do.
Now, Christina, you've met Scott. Would you expect any less out of him?
Any less?
Would you expect,
I don't know. That was pretty damn high. My book is pretty awesome.
But no, I mean,
he is the
maker.
Would
you expect any less out of him?
No, I love him. He's incredible, and I think he and I have the same attitude. You should have known me in college. It's just, life, I have a saying that life is too short to take seriously, and eternity is too long for regrets. And if you're not laughing at yourself, you're not doing it right. So I understand what he's doing. Those people are going to remember that moment with a grin until the day they die.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible gift to give to them, just that moment of whimsy, that moment when life was something different than you expected. And I think that's wonderful. And I think that's what he's about. Life is different than you expect. Be ready.
Yeah, but what most people don't know about that is it was an Asian schizophrenic recovery session is what they were trying to do, and that reversed everything.
Oh, my gosh, I didn't know that.
No, I'm kidding.
Asshole.
Now, see, Christina, you thought it, I said it.
I've learned one thing. My filter is broken. What goes in my head comes out my mouth, and somebody's going to be offended. Shut up, Howard. Matt, mute Howard. Just mute him.
Nope.
It's the safest.
He's muted himself this whole damn conversation.
But I've learned that what comes into my head goes out my mouth. There's no filter. I don't care. You know what? Here's the thing. If you can't have fun and if you can't have a good laugh at life, you're just spinning your tires. Get the hell over yourself. You're not that special. There's how many billions of people on this planet? And you know what? Somebody somewhere is laughing. And you might as well join them. The hell with it.
There's an old saying that life is hard. You can laugh or you can cry. But if you laugh, they send you to better hospitals.
That's true. And I found out the hug me jackets are a little more comfortable. They actually insulate them in some places, but you have to get to those places.
You know, I definitely agree with that, and there's a reason that we have people that we love, and most people, and this is truth, most people can recite their favorite comedic sketch that just made them laugh, even if it was, you know, 50 years ago they saw it, and it was, you know, Jack Benny or something like that of the older generation, or, you know, for us, I mean, even the 80s and 90s, like Mitch Hedberg, or, you know, even nowadays, you know, with any of the comedians that are out there, is comedy gets to your soul. Drama stays in your head. So any sort of dramatic movie or anything you've seen that you remember a scene from, you'll remember it, but it doesn't make you feel like comedy does.
Right.
And comedy spawns laughter, which laughter, I agree with the diagnosis back from the 1950s. Laughter is the best medicine. So if you can honestly, truly laugh and just have, you know when you have that gut-busting laugh where you start to say, I can't breathe, and your stomach muscles hurt?
Mm-hmm.
That's phenomenal.
I tore a back muscle watching Tosh.0 once. I laughed so hard that I went into a coughing fit because I was getting over whooping cough. And I coughed so bad tore back muscle. They had to bring me to the hospital. I couldn't move. And I still find that very funny. I'm starved for life, and I still think it's funny.
If you still have that bill, I will see if I can. I'll talk to my uncle and see if I can get in touch with Daniel so you can send it to him.
Awesome.
You better damn well guarantee that that would be on a on an episode of Tosh.0.
Well,
Bishop Christina Ricci tore a back muscle watching Tosh.0.
I know. When people find out I watch that, they're like, oh, I've got a story for you. I saw the Book of Mormon. Again, I should have torn another back muscle watching that one. But I was dressed up in the black and the purple collar and the dress shoes and everything, and even my chain. And people are watching me walk in this. I think it converted like 6 people because they're like, what church do you go to? Because if you think this is funny, I am there. And I'm like, that bitch is the funniest damn thing I've ever seen.
And it's not just a costume, like you were trying to be funny. Well,
oh, no.
Knowing you, I'm sure you were trying to be funny to wear that to that. Because I've seen you dress normal.
Well, we were all dressing up, and that's the only dress up clothes I had. But you know, the other thing is, I just wanted people to feel better about laughing at it. Do you know what I mean? If I'm there and I'm laughing, then people are like, oh, there was a bishop there. I don't feel bad. Because some of those jokes you would feel really bad about laughing at sometimes.
Well, did you ever see the South Park that modeled what that whole play was after? Like the actual South Park episode?
Oh, my God. One of the funniest things. Martin Harris, dum dum dum.
Yeah, dum dum dum. And they pop in. This is what they actually believe.
I love that one of the Scientology, and they had to flash it at the bottom. Scientologists actually believe this.
Yeah. Oh, the aliens came down and. And they dropped the prisoners into volcanoes. Matt Stone and Trey Parker, like seriously, they actually did the research and they're 100% accurate on that.
Oh, exactly. And you know, everybody has to laugh, and at the same time, I sat there laughing and said, that's no more impossible than the fact that I eat bread that's really flesh, so I'm not going to get too serious about myself.
and that's one thing that I think that a lot of people, and I'm going to dive into the religious aspect just for a second, but and people who go to church, it doesn't matter if it's Catholic.
Dun dun.
Go ahead, dive into the religious aspect, Matt.
Where the
Sorry.
Fuck that came from, but okay. And the fact that people, when they receive communion and it's the body of Christ, the blood of Christ, and Catholicism,
mm-hmm.
is you obviously feel that it's like basically a whole wheat cracker, and it's watered down wine. But there are certain people that take that way too seriously instead of the symbolic nature behind it. is...
Yes, and I think people can get down to... I think that what happens is when people believe something so strongly and revere it so highly, they get to the point where they become legalists about it, just total legalists about every aspect of that thing. I believe it is the body and blood, and I'm not going to go into the whole theological argument, but for me, and why that is and why it makes sense, but for me, if you think about that in terms of even the paranormal or the physics end of it, there's this guy who wrote a great book called The Physics of Immortality, and in it he proved that as far as mathematics and everything goes, all of Christianity, particularly Catholic Christianity, would be true if you believe that Jesus was the omega point and absolute zero, and the whole nine yards is really fascinating. But anyway, if you look at it from a paranormal angle, there are points of intersection in the universe where several different worlds and realities collide, and where that point is itself like a doorway. And for me, theologically, I do believe that that is part of infinity at that moment. And so if that's so, then that little tiny point, that little tiny doorway is something that I want to approach, request, and get. So for me, it's just this truly powerful moment where the intersection of all that is in my hand, and then comes inside of me. And so for me, that's just an extremely powerful, powerful moment. But I think that anything can be taken too far. And as I say, even on my radio show, the one thing about this church, I had a vision, which is why I founded this. And I was kneeling in front of the tabernacle where the Eucharist is kept. So in there is, you know, theologically the body of Christ. And I was praying and saying, can you, I knew what he wanted me to do. I didn't want to do it. I was basically asking him, you know, take the cup away, give me a better cup. And I was in front of the tabernacle, and it's this beautiful gold box with a key inside. And I heard clear as day God say to me, get me out of this golden cage and stop protecting me from my people. And I looked around, and I saw the altar rail to keep the people away from the altar, and I saw this box and that gate, and I went, you're right. You know, some of this is to protect the gold and things from thieves, but the rest of it, all the legalities are about keeping people away from God because they're impure and they'll somehow hurt God or hurt themselves in approaching him because they're not good enough. And that's bullshit. It has always been bullshit. You don't keep the dirty kid away from his mom. You know, you let him go there because she'll clean him up. That's the point. Here, go get clean. Go fix yourself up, make yourself perfect, then go to God. No, asshole, you go to God to get that done. So that's kind of where I come from with it. It's just, I think that if you go and you read the words of Jesus, that's the angle that I'm coming at it from. Bring everybody. There is no holds barred. You come as you are, just show up. That's it, like that journey. Get on the road, limping, crawling, screaming, bleeding, rolling. It doesn't matter. Just get on the road.
Yeah. Well, no, and I don't know, you're not far away from me, and I'm not going to say where it is, but you're not far away from me at all. But where I live in Naperville, the one thing that I, every time I go to church, and it actually sickens me of, well, again, like Dennis said, you have the golden ticket, so it's a totally different scenario. But for people who live in Naperville, which are shitbags 6 days out of the week, but then they go and they take this, you know, they take this wafer and have a sip of diluted wine with holy water, that they feel that they're holier than thou, and they fuck up the next week until next Sunday, and then they're forgiven again, and then everything's perfect.
No, they have that fucking opinion before they even walk on the goddamn property. Sorry. This is where I lose
it's
my
the God
shit.
Bless, it's the God bless property, by the way. Which, Dennis...
This is where I lose my shit.
Which is why we don't normally discuss religion or politics. We've been over this shit.
Nobody ever wants to religion. Ever, no. The moment they wake up on Sunday morning, they go, oh, I have to go to church. Oh, I'm all this and a bag of chips. You know what, asshole? No, you're not and a bag of chips, and you're not even all that. You're a piece of shit 5 days a week. But all of a sudden, come Sunday morning, you're this religious, oh, you know, I love everybody. No, you're out to screw everybody all week. No, I absolutely hate church thumpers. You're either religious or you're not. And here's the difference. If you live by the theory that no matter what I do on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, I'm going to pay for that in the outcome of my life, you are the individual that I want to live with. Because if you duck and cover, and if you live your life the way that it should be done Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, and that's how you base your life, then you're the person that I want to live my life with, and that's the person that I want to be friends with. If you're the type of person that goes Monday, well, you know what? I can fuck them no matter what I think. Tuesday, well, blah, blah, blah. Then come Sunday, you're going, I'm going to make up for all of this. No, asshole, you're not, because you screwed me as another human on Wednesday. And I didn't do a damn thing to you. See, that's why I can't go to church. You're either good or you're evil, or you're shit or you're good. But if all during the week you treat me like shit, but come Sunday you want to pat me on the back and tell me that everything's okay, you can't shit on me and tell me it's raining. I'm not that stupid.
A turd, a turd, you can't polish a turd.
You can't polish a turd and convince me it's a diamond. You are so fucking right.
Well, it also depends on heat and pressure. And if you have a diet of a lot of coal, there is a good chance that you can shit a diamond.
You know what? Here's one of the things that I learned when I was going through divorce. You can wrap a diamond in newspaper, and you can wrap a turd in gold. You know what? No matter how much you press that damn thing, a turd wrapped in diamond and gold and everything else is still a turd. The
just
inside
a turd.
Is what everything is about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now you woke me up. Now you pissed me off. And I love you, Christina. I will never fucking accept a human being that wants to blow smoke up my ass. I am not a chimney. I have never been a chimney. And I will always despise somebody trying to blow smoke up my ass. I will falter. I will open my wallet. I will do whatever it takes to prove that I don't want to fuck somebody over. But there are so many people in this world right now that will fuck you over in a heartbeat because it gets them ahead and it sickens me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I see it all the time, Dennis. My husband's in politics. He works for elected officials. And so we're both pretty heavy behind the scenes. Not, I don't get anything out of it, unfortunately, because the good, honest people never do. You pretty much get screwed over all the time. What amazes me is how creative people are in the screwing. The varieties of how they can fuck you over are endless. I was shocked. I got quite an education, and my husband always says, you know, what concerns me about you, Christina, is there's just a certain naivete. And I'm like, I'm not naive. And he goes, no, I don't mean stupid. Or he said, you don't understand evil. You just don't get it. You never see it coming. It shocks you. You shake your head. He said, you can't wrap your mind around it. He said, I wrap my mind around it every day. And I, you know, and he believes that's why we're married, because he can handle it. And he's right. I never see it come. I love everybody. I mean, unless I can pick up on it from you, I'm usually pretty shocked by it. I always am. And you know what, Dennis? I hope I always am. I hope I never get so cynical that it doesn't surprise me anymore. I've made it to almost 40 with some really horrible life experiences, but I'm hanging in there. Not by much.
Well, I'm past 40. And what I've discovered in people is they're always about themselves.
Right.
If we can take people back to 200 years ago or 2,000 years ago, when they cared about the other that was around them, we would have so much better world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to happen.
Just 40 years ago.
Hey Dennis,
so
Christina. Hey, Dennis, Christina, Howard, we have now less than 2 minutes left, or 1 minute left before it's going to say goodbye. So,
Christina, I will call you tomorrow. There is
okay,
no doubt.
Perfect. Yes, you call me and we'll set something up for your own personal thing, and then we can talk about anything else I can help you with.
Yeah, I have to call you about this house. It is a Lutheran house, which she's a little nervous about because it's not her denomination, but she trusts me. Dennis has talked to her, too.
God is God, no matter what way you think about it. Christina, I hate to say it, but you really need to look in on this house.
Okay.
I hope and pray that you will, because it does need your knowledge.